My name is Dave.
And I'm Carl.
And you are listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero.
Bigfoot Ground Zero. To contact the show, email BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com.
All right, what's up, brother? How's it going?
Doing very well so far. You?
Not too bad. You sound so formal tonight.
trying not to be, actually. That's probably why I am.
I know, right. Exactly. We'll shake off the rust here a little bit. But, good show tonight. So we're going to talk about the research experience that I had this last spring, out in Washington. We'll cover off on that, like we talked about leading up to the show. But before we do, did you, just totally off Bigfoot topic, did you hear, of course you did, about the earthquake in Alaska yesterday? I think it was like 7.2 or 7.0.
Yes. I think it was 7.2, yeah.
I know, it's crazy. And how messed up is this that I'm thinking what it's going to do to the Sasquatch population out there? I know, it's insane.
Well, you know, there were the tsunami in Indonesia a couple of years ago. There were reports of all the animals running to higher ground before the wave hit.
Yes. Yeah, you know what? In some respects, yeah, I think they're a little smarter than we are. Certainly in tune with what's going on around.
Yes, more in tune. Yes.
Oh, there was a tribe out there, too, of indigenous peoples, and I forget exactly where it was. I saw this on Nat Geo. It's weird that you bring that up. It was sometime last week, and in the entire area, I want to say it was in Thailand. I forget exactly where it was, but in this area, this region was completely decimated. This tribe of people who are completely unplugged from everything went up into the hills while everyone else went out to the ocean to look. And they pretty much had to rebuild all their houses, but no one died. They were really in tune.
So we were talking about being more in tuned?
Yeah, and it's really weird because there hadn't been a tsunami in generations, I mean, recent memory at least. And so, you know, they probably had stories about if the ocean does this, if it starts to recede, that's really bad news and you need to run.
Yep.
They didn't question
yep.
it. They just did it.
Yep.
But what was really interesting is, and this is as far as I go on conspiracies with this whole earthquake thing, what was interesting, there was a news article that came out. It's one of these ones, it's like a blip that you could miss it if you're not paying attention. And I just happened to catch it when it happened. There was a series of really deep, I don't know if it would be ultra-low frequency sound waves or waves that had traveled around the Earth. I think it was 20 minutes that these things went on that scientists didn't know what it was. Like I said, it was like a 20-minute period. And this is just prior to the earthquake in Alaska. And it was really interesting because the person that caught what was happening, it was somebody that was on, who are the folks that do the monitoring of the...
The USGS,
yes,
Geological Survey.
Right. Well, apparently that they have this camera that you can monitor, goes 24/7. You can monitor what's going on if you're a civilian and you want to see. And somebody caught something that was happening that would have otherwise potentially gone by the wayside. So there was a nerd somewhere with nothing else to do in their life except stare at this camera, at this television screen, to see if...
And the world will be saved by the nerd.
That's exactly right. Oh my gosh, dude, it's insane. But that's the thought that came to my mind. It's like this whole event's going on, but these sound waves are happening, and then the earthquake happens. I don't know if they're tied together, whatever. I'm not a geologist.
Well, and it's weird because I saw that around the world wave news story.
Right.
And that day, I checked the USGS internet website for earthquakes that were above 2.5 on the Richter scale, and this was a couple days ago, and that 24-hour period around the world, there were 61 seismic events above 2.5, and they literally were around the world. Like, half of them occurred in Alaska, but the other half ranged from Indonesia, Romania, Wyoming, you know, all over the world. and they were above 2.5 within that same 24-hour period. So something, I don't know what, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a volcanologist, something happened.
Yeah,
I don't know what.
I don't know either. And folks, if you're listening right now, this is not, we're not going off on a woo tangent. We're certainly not a paranormal show by any means. This is just something that kind of came up. But yeah, I have no idea. But the fact that you know that data off the top of your head, people who are listening, this is why I call Carl Google, because pretty much I don't get it.
The world will be saved by the nerd.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, you are listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. And thanks again for tuning in tonight. Feel free to reach us at BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com, BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. You can also check us out on Facebook. There's a Bigfoot Ground Zero Facebook page. And, feel free to go there. We have the upcoming shows. Feel free to post anything, Squatch related that you like. You know, of course, keep it clean and fun, and we'll keep it up there. I mean, the site and the group is definitely geared toward research, but we like to have fun as well. And like I said in the first show, there's that campfire lore around Bigfoot that we certainly want to keep going as well. But there's also a number. There's 508-418-9232, 508-418-9232. If you had a sighting, feel free to leave us a voice message. We'll get back to you, whatever contact information you'd like. If you want to be, remain anonymous, feel free to do so. But the folks that you are actually hearing on these shows are people that have contacted us, and we're actually playing their recording. So we'll make sure we get that at the end of the show. So format-wise, going forward, it's going to be, Carl and I are going to be doing our thing. We'll bring on researchers. We'll talk about certain things, and then we'll do the sightings at the end of the show. We certainly didn't want to lose that aspect of it. But Carl, let's talk about my experience last spring in Washington. I know you had some questions on it and that sort of thing, but I'll walk us through it. Feel free to pop in, ask any questions that you like, to the best of my ability. I'm so bummed out. I didn't do this earlier. You ever do one of those things where you wish you jumped on it and you're like, oh, when it comes down to it, I'll remember everything. And I'm sure there's some things that I've forgotten. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then it comes down to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And I don't want to fill in any blanks that aren't there, but, so let's go back in time. I know I told you prior to the trip that I was going out there, but, I had hooked up with Shane Corzin over at Monster X, and I talked to Chris Spencer as well. I know he's a big contributor to that show as well as ours. And from a research standpoint, both of those guys are super solid. I know they both worked with, Chris is pretty much one of the steering members of, or I'm sorry, Shane is one of the steering members of the Olympic project. And then Chris not only devotes his time there, but he also does a ton of work in the field. So you can see him on our Facebook page, BigfootGroundZero.net, and then you'll see him pop in. Also, Tootle Valley River Skookum is the Facebook page. Pop in and see him there. And you guys all know Monster X Radio. You can find Shane there. But there was a shameless plug. There you go. So, but these guys invited me to come out and sit in the field with them for a couple of nights. And it was one of those things where, hey, where do you want to go? And basically, it's a clean slate for me, right? I have an opportunity to go out and sit with some guys in the woods who know what they're doing and some places where we've had some experiences. And I have to tell you that it was funny because, you go and sit in the woods and you look and listen and you think, there's more to it than that. But you know what? There's protocol to follow. And there are things that you do and don't do. Certainly there's strict things you have to adhere to. Flying out there, I thought about that on the airplane. It wasn't the whole time, but I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is important to them. Therefore, it's important to me. One of the things I learned in the Bigfoot or Sasquatch community is if somebody brings you into their world, respect it, work with them. And it wasn't too hard to do. And it's kind of funny, looking at this whole research thing, it's not like you're researching, plant life and, the cycle of growth on certain plants and different times of the season. So you're actually out there hoping to have an encounter with an 800-pound something that will destroy you, potentially. But this this experience was interesting because something did happen. And it was something where, had I been with other people, and maybe folks that I've been with in the past, and I'll kind of leave it at that, but it may have been suspect. But I do believe that we potentially had an experience with a Sasquatch, because what I can't reconcile is what might have done what made the sound happen that happened, right? And do you mind if I just kind of walk back and go through it, and then you can just pop in? Sorry, man, I'm kind of going off on a tangent.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So we get there. I get out of the airport, literally, and these guys are motivated, man. When you're going out with them, you're going out, right? So I got to Chris's house after a day of travel. Shane was there. We just jumped in the cars and we headed out. And we did an overnight in one area. And I'm going to play some audio from this in another show. I'm just going to get permission from Chris to do it. I think he'd be okay with it. But he took me to an area where they definitely had something happen. And he gave me audio of things being thrown back at them and quite a lot of activity. You could tell by the tenor of, you know, what was going on, the texture, so to speak, of the palpable fear of what was happening, at least in a moment or two, that something strange had definitely happened. They brought us out to that place, or myself out to that place, and we did a lot of recording. You know, we walked the woods. Didn't really do any howls. That's not really protocol for them. That's not one of those things that they do, although I was dying to do it. And that first night, not a ton happened. You know, in fact, nothing really happened, which is kind of nice, because I'm thinking, okay, you know, I'd been out with Shane in the past, and it was a trip to when the Olympic Project is their kind of their public expeditions. I went on one of those, and there was something that happened, and I'm thinking, gosh, if I'm going to go out with these guys and something happens every time, that's kind of like, okay, you know, like, what's going on here? But the second night that we were out, we went to an area that, if you look and you type in the name of this location in Sasquatch, literally like 37,000 results come up in Google. And while it might seem like, okay, well, why do you have to keep secret about that? Because there also are times when you're out there at specific times of the year that you know people are not potentially out there, and you don't want to make it into a big deal in a community where people are more likely to go out there, right? And so you're knocking, and then something's knocking back, and it might be something knocking that thinks that you're something knocking back at them. So it was a little interesting. So I'm going to stay kind of away from it's the Gifford Pinchot National Forest is where we were, and I know that's huge, and a lot of people are going, well, great, genius. There's a lot of Bigfoot sightings there. But what happened was that where we ended up was an area where there was a hunting area, and I don't know if it was a camp. It was pretty remote. But one of the things that I noticed when I got there was there were these old logging roads. I think they were logging roads or access roads. The Pacific Northwest is pretty interesting. You know, up here in the Northeast, everything, all the campgrounds are pretty defined. I don't know if you find that out in your area, in the Virginia area there. It's pretty defined campgrounds, and you know, these are pretty much logging roads or access roads. And it feels like these campgrounds have been made, or these camping areas, by people just kind of pulling off in certain areas. And if you're there, they keep driving, they go on to another one. And it's pretty spacious, something that I certainly am not used to here up in the, you know, the Massachusetts, Maine or New Hampshire area. But it was really interesting because, and I don't know if the second night when we were there, if it's kind of like playing on your mind when you're there, like, okay, we're going to have experiences or whatever the case is. But we spent the day walking around. We talked about where we were going to set up recordings, where we were going to, you know, investigate either that night or that day, and how we were going to go about doing it. And what I learned is there's a whole, it's orchestrated, right? There's a dance to what you do. There's a reason behind everything. And it's funny, if you've ever researched with Chris, he'll keep you strict on what it is that you do, because he's really serious about it. And, you know, he was very, you know, adamant about, look, this is what we do with the lights. Here's where we're going to put the recorders. Here's what we're going to do. And everything's kind of choreographed. And something interesting happened, something really interesting happened that actually we didn't put two and two together until after the fact. and you know, kind of here's how it went. So it was getting to be dusk. It was myself, Shane, and Chris, and we crossed an area. There was a logging road. We crossed over it to an opposite area from where the camp was. We were setting some recorders. We were looking around for signs, whatever, you know, just kind of doing our due diligence, maybe 100 yards out from camp in either direction. And we get back and, you know, protocol, you all stay together. It's something that you try to strictly adhere to, because if something happens, you want to be accountable for what you've done. But at the end of the day, too, you want to make sure that you know it wasn't the other person kind of fooling around with you anyway. So Chris and I are sitting by the fire. Shane had taken off to literally walk up the trail maybe 50 or 75 yards to go double check and maybe replace some recording that he put up there. And Chris and I are talking, and I remember laughing and kind of breaking protocol, surely, and I think I gave like a howl or a whoop. It was like a howl, and my best, you know, short form Ohio howl. And right after I did that, I knew I was like, Shane's going to hear that and, you know, get ticked off because we did the wrong thing, and, you know, I felt bad about it. But Chris and I kind of laughed a little bit. We were talking and just shooting the breeze by the fire, and we hear this, you know, really loud whack, you know, on a tree, and it's probably, I don't know, 40 yards maybe off in the brush somewhere up in the area where Shane was. Anyway, he comes down maybe about 10 minutes later, you know, if that. We heard him coming through the brush and, hey, guys, what's going on? And he made a comment about who did that whoop. And I'm like, ah, that was me, you know. And he said, you know, he was gracious about it, but I could tell that I kind of screwed up. But anyway, long story short, he had mentioned, I forget exactly how it worked, and this is why I should have documented this right when we did it. But we all came to the conclusion, because we had brought up the knock, like, oh, we thought you responded by that knock. And we quickly realized that he hadn't knocked, and he wasn't really in the area where the knock came from. So it was about dusk. I mean, it was almost dark, certainly like last light. And we were in an area where people definitely had at least Class B, where they had heard the knocks and the howls and that sort of thing. But it was really creepy, because as a group, we understood that potentially something was between Shane and the camp, and had responded potentially to something that we did within camp, if that makes sense. And it was a little disconcerting for Shane, because he realized that something had gotten between him and the safety of the campfire where Chris and I were, and it was something completely inadvertent.
I would interject here,
yep,
that the thing that was probably the most disconcerting,
yep,
was not the fact that something was between him and the camp, but the fact that something was between him and the camp that let its presence be known.
You know, that's a good point. It's almost like pissing on a post, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. That's actually a really good point. I didn't think of that. But it was...
Because if whatever it was had not made any noise at all, nobody would have known that anything was between Chris and the camp.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Actually, it was Shane. Shane was remote. He went
Shane,
out.
Shane, sorry.
Now, here's the thing. If you're a sane person, which everyone... hopefully listening is, if you're not saying, that's fine too, I guess. But it's interesting, because there are only a few people on a very short list who I would trust this happening with. So for example, if somebody was out of camp and that had happened and they came back into camp saying, did you guys hear that? I would have called bullshit like immediately, right? You know, because obviously things can be faked and that sort of thing. I don't imagine, and I would go to the firing squad saying that Shane would not have duped us for any reason. The guy's solid. It'd be like I would stand up for you or for Chris or anybody else, right? And it's just, you know, when something happens and all the three of you look at each other like, holy crap, you know what that means, right? And we literally, it kind of dawned on all of us, and then we did the hell yeah, because we got it on audio. Which I'm gonna in the next show I'm gonna make sure those guys are okay with it. I'm gonna play it. I mean, it's just a series of not like Chris and I are talking by the fire, we're shooting the breeze, and then I give the little howl whoop thing, and then a few minutes later a knock happens, and then Shane comes back, and you can hear him coming back into camp. So we'll get that played out for you. I know I'm teasing like a future show, and that's not cool, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's what happened. And I mean, and it's funny because you have these, it's almost like you're in the military. You and I served together and we've known each other for a long time. And what is it? And they say that you have the hours of boredom punctuated by seconds of terror.
Yes.
Okay. This is
seconds of stark terror.
Stark terror. This was not quite at that scale, but your senses certainly were up. And I am not ashamed to say this. That, well, I'm kind of ashamed, but I'm not. My tent was the furthest out from the camp, and it was off toward that area where the knock came from. I will say that I slept. I will say that I slept in the car that night. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
There is no shame in that, Dave.
No shame in my game, baby. I'm the one.
No, you know, shame.
No shame. But it's funny. I'm kind of telling a story on Shane now that we had the cameras going, the IR cameras, and you could see at one night, you know, Shane moved his tent a little closer to the fire, but I'm sure it was because he wanted to be warm.
Absolutely, yes.
And you know what's funny? And Shane, if you're listening, don't come after me with a tomahawk. That speaks to the validity of what happened, right? I mean, that guy's been out in the woods a ton of times, and you know, something like that happens and it's legit. I don't care who you are, man. You don't know if there's one something or many somethings out there just beyond the firelight, you know, looking
at
you. At
that point, my name would not be Carl. It would be Sally.
Sally. And it's almost like they're waiting for the firelight to die so they can get closer and closer. Mm-hmm.
As that ring of light gets closer and closer. Yes.
I feel like if I ever get lost in the woods and, you know, once I'm done crapping my pants, realizing that I may not ever be found, I'm going to make a fire for the ages, and I will have, it'll like be funeral pyres all around me. I'll have north, south, east, west, south by southwest, north by north. It'll be like almost a complete circle of fires that I can sleep in all night.
So yeah, you're going to go out like a Viking.
It just gets spooky, you know, it just gets spooky. So whatever.
Absolutely. Yes.
I don't care. Especially in the Pacific Northwest, dude. I grew up camping as a kid in Southern California, and the woods are what they are. Up in the Northeast, they are what they are. Maine gets pretty dense, but it's like when you get up into the Pacific Northwest, it's literally almost like a freezing rainforest. I mean, it is so dense, it's not even funny. And those ferns are there maybe 3 or 4 feet off the ground that you have to move through. There's like moss and stuff hanging from trees that look like they've been dead for 400 years. And and then you get this fog coming through that'll hug the ground. It's like the most insane thing ever. Kudos to those guys that go out by themselves. I mean, even if you're armed, you know, there's cougars everywhere. You hear those things. You know, we set off, it was funny as part of this too. I was asking the guys, dudes, can I do a howl? And finally I can just see him like, all right, go ahead, you know. And so I did a howl, and then all the coyotes lit up in the area. So I mean, that place is just teeming with game, you know. Anyway, I don't know, I wanted to, you know, if you wanted to pitch anything in, I just wanted to share that story. I figured we could chat about it, and everything that you hear about, that you go through when those things happen in a Squatch related incident, at least from a Class B or like a near, what I call like, you know, a near sighting or near miss or whatever, you know, all of those things are real, you know.
I've not had any of that out here in Virginia because it's fairly well built up.
You know, it's funny you say that, because Chris also had posted on Tootle River Valley Skookum. I believe he posted it there. I'm not speaking out of school here, but he was out hunting the other day in an area fairly close to, you know, people, houses and that sort of thing, not too far away. And he heard a howl that is almost indicative of what he caught probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago at this point, but in a new area, and he's placing stuff out there. you don't always get you don't always get what you think you're going to get where you think you're going to get it. I mean, point being is he's you know, very close to urban areas, and you know, he's getting these sounds, and then some of the stuff that he's gotten in his X1 area is certainly further away than where he found these other sounds. But I don't know what area you where are you when you're doing most of your, we'll call it woods walking, squatching, not squatching.
So I live in Alexandria, Virginia.
Yep.
And I will typically range from, if you're looking on a map, Northern Virginia is like rolling hills. There are lots of horse ranches and cornfields out here in Northern Virginia. Usually from Culpeper out west to the eastern side of the Shenandoah Mountains up to Winchester on Interstate 81, and this giant, it looks like a parallelogram, a crooked rectangle going back out to Manassas and back down to Culpeper. That's kind of where I'm looking. And it's strange because you could be in a town, 30, 40,000, 50,000 people, you drive literally 10 minutes and it's a farmhouse every couple, 2-3 miles.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's no lights, no street lights, very little in the way of life out there, except these little isolated little farm communities with a few hundred people and the occasional horse ranch. And then you drive into Manassas where it's, you know, 150,000 people.
Right, right. Yeah, Virginia's weird.
That's like kind of where my area is.
Yeah, but there's been sightings out there. And there's
been a lot of them out there in the last 15, 16 years, yes.
I feel like there's a whole tangent we can go off on. I know pretty soon we have to get some of these sightings. But, yeah, we should talk about that area again, because I know you've, since you started last couple of years, in your squatching endeavor, I know you've met some folks from around that area, and yeah, it'd be nice to catch up and kind of talk about that a little bit as well. So let's do this. We're going to go ahead and get on with the stories. So you and I next week, maybe we'll talk more Virginia squatch and get into that a little bit. But I think at this point we should probably transition to the stories and say goodbye to everybody right now, because we're going to be gone on the back end. So for Carl, I'm Dave. Rebecca and Slick, thank you for the help putting the show together. Boys and girls, enjoy the stories.
Bigfoot, Ground Zero.
Spring of 1988, and I was on a horse ranch. The owner, he had to go away on business, and his wife and son were going to be delivering baby horses. And so me and my ex and child, we went there to help out, and we were woke up at 3 in the morning, and I was like making coffee for them, you know, while they were in the barn helping the horses. And I had went out and took some coffee out, and a mama horse come running down the hill, just yelling and whinnying and going crazy, kicking and bucking. And I went over to the fence, and I tried to calm her down, and she kept snorting up the hill. So I looked up, and that's when I seen it. You know, it was standing at the top of the hill, full body. He was looking down at us. I took off. As soon as I seen it, I took off with the barn. And I told them what I'd seen, and they laughed. You know, they put me down, you know, whatever. So I went back out. I wanted to see and make sure I seen what I thought I seen. When I came back out, he was walking into the tree line. And then that's when the guys came out, and they didn't see it. And so I kept watching, and I told them, you're going to have to go up. The mama horse's baby is missing. She didn't have her baby. She was still, you know, throwing a fit. And it was maybe, I kept watching, and he'd step out the tree line, you know, and step back into the tree line, and I'd run to the barn and say, come and look, hurry, hurry. You know, nobody would come out right away. He'd step back out, he'd step back in. And I told, you know, so like 45 minutes later, so they took, the two guys took up on, off on the hill with, in their truck to see if they could find the baby. And they found it up on the back side of the field, the top, you know, their pasture, and it was dead. But they thought it was dead for natural causes. So they came down and they were going to take a shovel back up, but then another mom, they had been delivering babies. And another one of the mom horses, when it, you know, she was ready, so they stuck around the barn for about an hour. But in the meantime, I kept watching for this Bigfoot, and he had stepped into the woods, and I couldn't find him. So I just kept looking around, you know, running from one end of the front of the barn to the other end of the front of the barn. And I spot him walking out of the woods with the horse, the baby horse. And he laid it down on top of the hill. And then he started inching his way down to the back of the barn. And I kept, you know, I just kept, I couldn't take my eyes off of him, you know. And when he would see me, I'd either duck in or he'd, you know, get out of the way where he couldn't, I couldn't see him, or he would duck out and look at me. But, like, once he got down by the back of the barn, you know, that's when I was horrified. I mean, I had tears running down my face. I was devastated because I couldn't get anyone to believe me. You know, I went in and told him about him carrying the baby horse, and they, you know, joking and goofing around and stuff. And so he kept tucking in behind the barn, you know, and then once he got up to the barn where he could touch it, I could see how big he really, I mean, I knew he was humongous. The barn, it was like, oh my God, you know, because I'd never seen anything that tall before. And he, when he was standing against the barn, he was like almost to the half point, and it was like a 1.5 story, you know, had like hay thing on top. He would like had his hand on the edge of the barn, and he would peek out, and then I, you know, was peeking out, and then he would, you know, peek back out, and then he'd peek again, and I would peek again, and then he would. He wouldn't come back out for a minute, you know, so I would run to the other end of the barn, the front end, to see if maybe he was looking off the other side, but I couldn't see him. So I'd go back down to the other end, and by this time I wasn't even telling him in the barn what was going on because they just kept laughing and calling me names and stuff. So I was trying to keep him in my sights to make sure he wasn't going to go get in the house and get the kids. You know, that was the thing in my mind, I guess the mother in me, you know. Well, and by the time they would get out there, he'd be back in the woods again, you know, step back in the tree line. I mean, he never made a sound, you know, other than the trees, you know, when he'd step through the woods, you could hear the snapping, that kind of stuff, you know, rustling at the, you know, because it was spring. Things were just, you know, starting to get green. It was right at the end of the winter, first of spring. And that was the only noises that I heard that he made was going through the woods. He was about 8 to 9 foot tall, and he was white. His face had like a beard that was like 1.5 inches or 2 inches long. He didn't have any kind of mustache. His fur, I say it was white, but there was like some color streaks here and there. So I don't know if it was dirt or if it was just his hair color changing. Didn't really look that ape, you know what I mean? I kept saying his hair's white like a bear, but he walks and looks like a man. And I just kept telling them that in the barn, and they just kept laughing at me, you know. And I'm in hysterics, I'm crying, you know, please believe me, come here, you know. Bigfoot had set the horse down like 45 minutes to an hour later. They went to go up on the hill to bury the baby. And when they got up there, it was gone. So they started walking the tree line, the fence line. They said there was no blood, there was no hair on the barbed wire fence. They just were, they didn't know what the hell to think, you know, is what they were saying. Before they had gotten back down to the barn is when the Bigfoot kind of, it was looking around, and at that time we kind of waited a little longer while we were looking at each other. And I still had tears running down my eyes, you know what I mean? But I kind of like like swenched my lips a little bit, almost like a little tiny smile, and it seemed like he did the same thing. And he just turned around and walked back up the fence, or up the hill, and picked up the baby horse and looked back at me, and he just went into the woods, and I could hear him for a long time, you know, snapping and all that, the tree branches, and I never seen him again.
Bigfoot, Ground Zero. Program runtime terminated.